Digital photography is always changing, and our camera expert is with us today to talk about some of those changes. Larry Mueller here again with Jack Socha, photography instructor. He's author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. We'll be talking about some of those new technologies and a camera that's made out of paper. What type of cameras work for you? Do you have questions about taking photos? What are your photography questions? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send an email at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show is the title of that. You can post your questions or comments there. Or you know what? If you've got a cool photo that you've taken, or maybe a question about a photo you've taken, post that up on our Facebook page and we'll see what we can do with it. And Jack Socha, welcome back. It's been a while. It's good to have you back.
Well, nice to be here. And yes, indeed, in the interim couple of months, things have really been moving along in the world of digital cameras.
Well, you were recently introduced to a new paper camera.
There is a camera, and I have to underscore, this is not a novelty camera that really doesn't take good pictures, but there's an entrepreneur, and he's in Taiwan. In fact, many of them may be listening. I told them about the show, so they may be tuning in on the internet right now. And I spoke to George Lin, and he worked on this. He never had a camera when he was a kid because his family couldn't afford film and processing and all that. And after he went to college and studied electronics and all this, he took him 4 years. But he designed a little camera that really, if you imagine a deck of cards and maybe make it half the width or thickness of a deck, it's a little circuit board with a high-quality lens, 5 megapixels, which is plenty for most photography. And he decided to make something ecological. He creates the cases for this that wrap around it out of very high-quality cardboard. And you can get different cases to change them out. They even make one for people who are super ecology-minded that actually has a seed of a flower embedded in the cardboard. So when you want to get rid of the cardboard case, you put it in the ground and a flower grows. Now, I've been playing with one of these now for several weeks. The first one, they're not available in stores in the States at this point. You have to go to eBay, and you'll find sellers in Taiwan who sell them. And shipped from Taiwan, they're around $64. And that does not include a card, you know, a regular SD card. But after using these complicated cameras, this thing has got one button. You hold it down to turn it on, then you use it to take pictures, and you hold it down to turn it off. And that's it. And there's no flash. There's no screen on the back. There's a little switch that you can switch to go from color to black and white and two other special effects. It is a very liberating camera because it's not a large camera. It's the size of a, you know, like I say, like a package of Chiclets or something like that, or one of these breath gum packs you see in the stores. And you can stick it in your shirt pocket. It runs on AA batteries, two AAA batteries, about 300 shots, fixed focus, no zooming. But I have been taking some just amazing pictures with this. As a matter of fact, I just put a gallery up on our secondary website that we'll talk about later that shows you some of the pictures it takes. It is just so darn much fun. And then you can either plug it into your computer or you can take the card out and stick it in your tablet or your card reader, and the pictures are fantastic. He designed the whole thing himself. There are special algorithms that balanced out the exposures for the average shooter. I hate to say it's like an Instamatic from the 60s, but it's that kind of fun. It's for people who don't want to get involved. They just want to take a picture. It's also really good for the fine art people who enjoy using the Holgas and the Lomo cameras and these other cameras that are out there that are kind of in an artsy set. They're really cool.
Well, it really sounds pretty cool. I've got to go online and take a look. And I have Joe was showing me some of the photos from your site.
Yeah, I just put them up there this morning. I should mention that what we've done is we've got two sites now. The original site, which is acpress.com, was really designed to sell our books and our other products that are for instructions, and they still are. We have our book up there, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, which I authored based on years of teaching students how to use their cameras. And for a summer sale, it's on sale for $10 shipped because we want you to learn to use your camera before you take that fantastic vacation. So acpress.com is still there. Our second site, which I put together, is really a fun site for creative stuff. It's still kind of under construction, but there's a lot there. It's a takeoff on Silicon Valley. We have a lot of cats here, and we call it SillyCatValley.com. And so if you go to SillyCatValley.com and you click on Enter, you'll see a number of things for writers and a little bit of food and a little bit of coffee stuff, some photography stuff. It's all aimed at kind of spurring your creativity. And there is an extensive article on the paper shoot camera and the gallery right there. But that's SillyCatValley.com. And amazingly, no one had ever registered that name. I can't imagine why.
Jill reminded me, she put up a photo of that camera on Facebook, on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and then a link to sign up as well for your information as well.
Yeah, this camera is doing very well in Taiwan and Japan. And if you go to their Facebook page, you'll see that the people who are taking pictures are of all different kinds. They range from high school kids to people with master's degree in photography. and one guy, when he's not using his Leica M Digital, which, as you know, is a pretty pricey camera, he's using one of these for fun. There's something about putting away the camera with the 12 buttons and the 15 different settings and just walking around that it gives you more time just to see what you're doing.
Some of the language, you know, we had SLR, DSLR cameras. I'm not sure everybody understands those terms.
And things are changing so fast you wouldn't believe it. For years now, people with interchangeable lens cameras had a so-called SLR, which meant single lens reflex, or DSLR, which was digital single lens reflex. And that referred to the fact that in the camera body, there was a mirror that reflected what was coming in the lens up into a pentaprism and into your eyepiece. This technology has greatly improved over the years, but it's been around since the 1930s.
That's a long time.
And all of a sudden now, you are seeing a big push. Sony and Olympus in particular are pushing what they call mirrorless cameras. Now, if truth be told, every compact digital camera ever made was mirrorless, but now they're making interchangeable lens cameras that replace all the mirrors and all the prisms with a sensor, and then in the eyepiece there is a very, very high-resolution electronic finder, which for a lot of people you won't be able to tell the difference, but it has a number of features that you could never imagine with a traditional optical system. For example, this thing called depth of field, how much is in focus.
Yeah.
On some of the models, everything that's not in focus in the back is fringed in one color, and everything that's not in focus in the front is fringed in another color.
So when you're looking home,
when you're looking through the electronic finder, you can just see what really is in focus. Now, this is something that can be turned off, of course. But it's a different look and a different feel. Sony has come out with some of the best-selling ones so far, the Sony Alphas. And I don't have one yet. I don't have one of the newest ones. They're pretty expensive. I
mean, yeah, what do they run?
$9,000 to $1,000, and the lenses are pretty spendy at the same time. So they're out there. But there are other less expensive cameras that are mirrorless as well. I picked up one. In fact, it's been discontinued. From Pentax, which, by the way, has now been purchased by Ricoh, is called the Pentax X5. It looks like a DSLR. It has a 16-megapixel sensor. It has a 26x optical zoom, the equivalent of 22mm to 580mm, and that's a real optical lens, but it doesn't come off. It just stays on there, because who needs more than that? And it's got a tiltable screen in the back, and it's got a pretty decent electronic viewfinder you can look into. And you can buy refurbished ones for about $150.
Wow.
I mean, it's nuts. It really is. So if you want to see what it's like to have a DSLR, and you don't want to go out and invest in the lots of money they are, hunt around for these Pentax X5s. You can buy them new for $235. But I bought one that was refurbished. And frankly, sometimes refurbished means people bought them and just returned them because they didn't like them.
Oh, amazing.
You know how that works. But it's very strange. There's getting to be fewer low-end compact cameras. One of note, Sony makes, that is widely available for about $89 with a 20-megapixel sensor. Now, it's only got a 3X zoom. It's a little compact camera. It does do HD video. Can you believe that? And it's widely available. If you just type in Sony $89 digital camera, you'll see several different models that are out there. And, you know, for people who are not wanting to invest a tremendous amount of money into a decent camera, it's a good camera. It doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles. And frankly, a lot of people in that price point don't want bells and whistles.
John in Shawano has a question for you. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, yes. Well, actually, two different things. You're talking about people in Taiwan, possibly even the Philippines. I've been selling my old camera collection. I live in a small house up here in Shawano. Lots of old things in the boxes, and people are really interested for some reason. I'm wondering if your guest, very knowledgeable guest, knows the reason why. Old 120 roll film, even if it's exposed, and flash bulbs and whatnot.
There is a nostalgia for the old simple days of cameras that were basically box cameras. This is one reason why the paper shoot camera is getting so much excitement, because it's kind of a return to that day when we just weren't, as they say, we weren't so darn technical.
Exactly. Yeah, well, running across these things, I do have, I don't use it, but a fine arts degree in photography from UW-Milwaukee from way back in the 80s, or late 80s, and I still have my old, I used to roll my own black and white film.
Oh, yeah.
Kodak film, and I think I have some left in that. I wonder if it's any good. But
Well, if you can find the chemistry for it, there is some stuff called a restrainer. I think it's benzotrienol or something that can knock down the chemical fog that builds up. But I once, in the 70s, I once developed a roll of film from 1927. It came out.
Fantastic.
And yeah, it is good. There's also a big push right now in certain circles for what they call direct positive paper. It's paper that you stick in your old view camera or whatever it is, and you simply develop the paper, and it reverses it and makes a print.
Oh.
And there's also some people who are developing film in instant coffee. It's called caffeinol. It's a mixture of very strong instant coffee and one other ingredient, so it's less toxic.
And then what do you get a brownish tinge then? Or?
No, it develops. It looks a little different than a regular film, and you still have to fix it, which means there's dissolved silver involved. But there's all this kind of retro nostalgic thing. There's not as many wet darkrooms as there used to be, but there's people still experimenting with stuff like that, pinhole cameras and things like that. It's almost like they're getting a little bit weary of the perfection that so much digital can produce.
Oh, man. Jack Soshar, our guest. We'll be back with him right after this look at the news. Talking photography with our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jack Soshar, the guest, back with us. He's a photography instructor and the author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And maybe you're having problems with your camera. Are you thinking of buying one, maybe? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And Jack Dennis from Ripon has a question for you, so let's go right there. Dennis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a DSLR on Nikon. I've had it about 6 months. And it takes great pictures. I love that. But when it comes to taking pictures like in the evening or special effects, I always reach for my old Yashica 35 millimeter because I'm comfortable with it. Should I just pack that 35 millimeter away and keep using the digital until I get absolutely used to it?
Oh, no. I mean, there is a little bit of a renaissance in film going on right now. And, of course, you can always have your film processed and scanned onto a high-resolution disc so you can enjoy it as you would with your digital. Part of the thing is simply familiarization. Any of these cameras have so many features that you have to really work your way through it. And this is why, in the book, we really started with basic things like resolution and exposure compensation and what I call the important things. And towards the back of the book, it was things, if you never even find them on your camera, it won't matter.
But, yeah.
And it's true. So basically, you probably will find that there are settings buried well within your camera that will produce some pretty remarkable results. It's just that you have to find them and experiment with them. But if there's something else going on that you're comfortable using, go ahead and keep using it. There's no one that's going to, you know, put a gun to your head and say, don't use film. Now, pricing-wise, someday the pricing may make it more difficult to use film. But right now, there's still this active group of people who are film shooters. If you go to any of the Facebook pages in photography, there's entire Facebook pages devoted to nothing but so-called analog photography. So it's still doing well. Hang on to your camera.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Renee emailed to say that she's decent photography skills and a mid-grade camera. She's considering a second career as a professional photographer and would like advice on how to improve her equipment and skills. Is it a good idea to take classes through the local technical college?
Oh, absolutely. Any way that you can learn will help. Now, again, the kind of stuff that I've dealt with in the book is the bedrock information. I mean, it's resolution, exposure, f-stops. It is like a class. However, at some point, you're also going to want to get very familiar with the complete controls of your particular camera. And in that case, any class that you can take on composition, on lighting, things like that, that's the kind of stuff I don't even touch in my book because, frankly, that's not my strong point. So, any classes you can take. When you are considering upgrading, and especially if you're going to try to make a living or part of a living, look at the lenses you need, not the camera bodies. Because you can stick a very, very good lens on a $500 Canon EOS Rebel and get some pretty good pictures. But if you stick your just normal kit lens on the $6,000 Canon, it isn't going to be that much better. So really, you have to look at the lenses and figure out what you're planning on shooting and what you need to get to accomplish that.
Here's a question about talking about accomplishing things. Bob on Facebook wants to buy a new camera. He'd prefer a Canon. His old camera was a Canon G6, and he really liked it. He doesn't want anything that is complicated. He mostly shoots captive reptiles and bugs fairly close up.
Well, as long as you're not needing to change out lenses and all that, you know, Canon still makes some really nice power shots. I have always loved the power shot cameras because most of them have either an electronic or optical viewfinder as well as a tilting screen on the back that you can tilt up. And as a matter of fact, I just took a few pictures for that Silly Cat Valley website of that paper camera using a somewhat aging Canon power shot. And so I would look into one of those. They're still going to have a lot of settings, but in most cases, if you put it on program and you learn to use exposure compensation, you can get some pretty good shots. I would look into those power shots. I think that they are still one of the best-built cameras around there, and especially for people who, when they really think about it, don't need to change lenses.
Christina in Glenwood City up next. Hi, Christina. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thanks a bunch for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Jack, about 9 years ago, and I've been listening to you for a good long time, you gave tips on how to purchase the better quality Adobe Photoshop software at a reduced cost. And I'm wondering, have you got any tips about that? Is that an option?
If I'm not mistaken, what Adobe has done now is they really are using a subscription service. My wife, who lays out books for a living, no longer spends $800 for an Adobe product like InDesign. She pays like $10 a month. And so that really is the way to go. One of the things I will be putting up on the new site, sillycatvalley.com, is kind of a clone of what used to be on AC Press, and that was these digital editing programs that don't cost anything. I still use them a lot. But I should work on that this week to try to get it up there because there's at least a half a dozen programs that cost absolutely nothing that work with Windows 10, and they do much, if not all, of what Photoshop does. And so for the average person who's correcting color and contrast and maybe cropping, they really work well. And frankly, I still use them myself. So yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I'll have to put that up there.
Oh, excellent. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we have a link to those, to your sites on our Facebook page. I should mention that again as well. If you need to go there, you can always find it on our Facebook page. Linda in Edgerton has some questions. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Great show as always. A long-time listener. But speaking about cameras, I've got a Canon EOS Rebel that takes fantastic shots. I've got a lot of my pictures on TV. My problem is sunrise shots. For some odd reason, if the sun comes up like a big, huge pink or red ball, my plastic camera bleaches out the sun. I can't keep the color in it. I don't know why. I have emailed Canon. They give me suggestions, which I have all the certain settings where it's supposed to be. And the surrounding color will become out darker, but the sun still comes out white.
Okay, there's two controls you need to learn about, and they are extensively covered in my book if you want to learn it that way. The first one is called the automatic white balance. The automatic white balance tends to try to correct color, and so early morning or late evening color or blue snow in the winter, it always tries to correct that. What you want to do is you want to find that control on your camera and set it basically for daylight. And this way, it will stop trying to correct that color. The other thing I think will do the most good is your exposure compensation control, the little plus-minus control. You may want to reduce or increase the exposure to accommodate these special lighting conditions. But I bet you between those two, that would probably be the best shot.
Where would I find that at?
Well, they're usually on your camera bot. Now, the automatic white balance is either in a menu or it's on a button.
Yep, I found I got that located, and I have that right where you that setting I've got down.
Yeah, okay. And then the plus minus control is usually on the camera body someplace. It's called the exposure compensation. And if you have the camera set for a fully automatic decision free, it won't work. You've got to put it on to program or some other setting where it will work. But I can almost guarantee you that's going to improve the pictures.
Okay, I'll have to look into that. Thank you so much.
And sure.
That point, so thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And go ahead, Jack.
I've often said that the exposure compensation control, which is found on all these cameras, whether they're the $88 one or the $9,000 Hasselblad that just came out, probably the most important control on the camera because it can make a huge difference.
Glenn in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Glenn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is converting slides over to the digital form for the homeowner, to do it at home. What would be the best machine to buy for that?
Well, frankly, no matter which way you slice it, it's still baloney. It is expensive and it is troublesome because you've got to clean them and all that. There are these ones you see in the big box stores that claim to be $100 slide duplicators are not. They are simply 6-megapixel cameras that are aimed at the slide, and that's okay for just average use. But frankly, if you really want to get into it, you have to either get a dedicated slide copier. I know that Minolta used to make them. There are several flatbed scanners that also have a light in the top of the lid that will do a nice job on doing slides as well. I think Epson makes them. There's a bunch of them out there, and frankly, they're not that expensive. If you're doing it for reproduction in a magazine or fine artwork, then you got to buy a really dedicated scanner that does really high resolution. Your best bet, I think, would be to get a flatbed because then you could gang them up on the flatbed and do it all at one time.
Okay, and is that flatbed scanner, is that kind of dedicated for the slide?
No, actually, it'll do prints as well. It'll do prints, or the difference is that the lid has a light inside that you can turn on.
Okay.
That makes the difference. And I think there's a whole Lexmark made one that I'm sure all the companies make them, and they're not that expensive because people, frankly, don't buy them much anymore, which I think is a terrible mistake. But yeah, we're looking to one to get, and you can even get ones that are USB powered if you want to.
Okay. And is the resolution fairly decent on those?
Yeah, well, we're talking, 2400 DPI and things like that. Now, if you really want to get up to the fine art quality, then you got to buy a dedicated slide scanner box, and that's going to cost you a lot more money.
Oh, I just want something that comes kind of close to what's projected that I can put
on. Oh, yeah, I would definitely consider getting a flatbed. This is what I tend to use. The other ways of doing it require you to get a light source and a macro lens and bellows and I would just go back to the camera. Yeah.
There we go, Glenn. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at talk@WPR.org and still love to see your good photography, your good photos on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So post a few of those too. John and Shano called to ask what setting he should use on his older Canon EOS to make black and white photos. It doesn't have a setting on the camera for black and white.
Oh, actually, it does. if you take it off decision free, and usually you put it on program, and you press the function button, which is in the middle of the dial, if I'm not mistaken, up will come that menu that lets you select the size and the automatic white balance and all that. And there's one there that will let you select color, black and white, vivid, muted, sepia, and so on. So that, I'm quite sure, they've had black and white on these cameras since the first one came out.
So there you go. And where is it again? Go through that.
Usually it's in the function. You've got to be in setting to take the picture. Generally speaking, you've got to take it off program, because when you have it on decision free, these options don't show up. But when you put it on program, which lets you use other options, they do show up.
And that's probably why people miss it all the time,
automatic. It's in the function menu, and that's the same place you can adjust the quality and the size of the picture and all that stuff as well.
Jim in Cresco, Iowa, it's your turn. Thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. You mentioned the plus and minus exposure settings a few minutes ago, and I'm wondering if those are different than the speed and the f-stop settings.
Yes, absolutely. What they are is they replace you having to manually change the shutter speeds or the f-stops. So even if you've got the thing on program and it's picking the shutter speed and the aperture for you, it simply tells the camera to either add or subtract, to lighten or darken the picture even more. And so, for example, if you were taking a picture of somebody who was lit from behind and they were a silhouette, you would move it towards the plus side. And you can go in increments, one unit, 2 units, maybe even 3, and that would take care of that. Yeah.
So it's like fine-tuning the other settings.
Yeah, it's basically correcting for what the light meter can't quite figure out.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. John, let's see. I guess we got John already. Stephen Economowoc emailed to say he can still get old film developed. His was exposed before 1983. Is it still good? And it sounds like it could be.
It could be. If it's black and white, it's much easier. If it's color, you may get some really severe color shifting of the dyes. But generally speaking, with a halfway decent editor, you can correct the color.
You know,
it's worth a try. Don't get prints made. Just get it developed and maybe put onto a disc, and then you can put it in your computer, and you can use whatever editing program you want to try to bring up the colors or change them.
If I had one from 1983, I'd want to know what was on it, because I wouldn't have any memory of it at all. It'd be kind of fun to look, wouldn't it?
I've got some black and white that goes back a number of years. I just never got around to developing. when I figure out how to use the instant coffee to develop them, I'm going to do it.
Okay. Well, you've talked a lot about the new things, and especially that paper camera. But what do you think cameras are going to look like in, I don't know, 5-10 years? Any ideas?
They're already changing. I mean, because they're not making as many DSLRs, they don't have that little hump in the middle. The lens doesn't have to be more or less in the middle of the camera. It can be off to one side. And I think that, for example, Sony has made some of the most radical redesigns of what they look like. Again, there's people using, camera phones, on their cell phones. And this is really shocking the industry. So I don't think you're going to see as much development in the world of compact cameras, because so many people are just going over and using their their phones. But in the other area, we're moving into kind of a boutique time. I'm seeing a lot of retro-styled cameras that have the zooms that you have to turn the ring in order to zoom. And you're also seeing a lot of boutique lenses. I mean, we're talking lenses that cost like $1,000 a piece. These are for either connoisseurs or people who just need specialty lenses. So I would say in a few years, we're not going to see a box camera anymore, but it's not going to look anything like what you're seeing on the shelves today. The interesting thing is, though, that the principles of resolution and exposure and, compensation and white balance, all this stuff will become more automatic, but it sure helps if you know what is being done for you ahead of time, because when things go wrong, then you can figure it out.
You know, just back to the smartphones for a minute. The iPhone, they have ads on television. You see these wonderful photos or these wonderful videos, and and then they at the end it says this was taken with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
They take pretty good pictures.
They are getting better. I mean, when you can buy a 20-megapixel camera for $89, you should be able to get a halfway decent megapixel camera in a phone. It's very nice. It really is. My only concern about any of these that don't have other viewfinders is on a bright, sunny day, you can't see what you're shooting.
Yeah, that's the big problem. And what do you keep in mind when you're taking photos with a phone?
Well, again, you know, sometimes you can buy like a little hood that can magnetically stick on or whatever. It's important, like everything else, that you try to not take a picture in a super dark area of action pictures. You just have to hold the camera as steady as you can. And if you can, take more than one picture. There are many apps now for these phones that have exposure compensation on them where you can adjust them a little bit back and forth. So once again, these basics have been around since photography was invented. There's about half a dozen things you really should understand, and once you do, you know, shutter speeds, apertures, things like that, sensitivity, once you get those, it doesn't matter what camera you use, you'll be able to figure out how to use it.
How well do these separate lenses for the phone work?
There have been auxiliary add-on lenses ever since cameras were invented, and you know, my joke is that if they really were that great, we never would have had interchangeable lens cameras. But even on the paper camera, the paper shoot, they've got a fisheye that you can stick on the front. And, you know, they're all pretty much the same optics. They're okay. They're fun to use. I just got a thing in the mail today that lets you take a stereo pair on your iPhone camera. So, you know, they keep throwing them on the front. But generally speaking, they're never quite as good as the optics that are actually on the camera itself.
Gloria in West Bend would like to get a recommendation for an iPhone tripod.
Well, you know, what you should do is go first look for a tripod adapter that would stick onto a regular tripod.
Oh.
And then you can buy, you know, all these tripods have what are known as a quarter 20 thread, and you may have one in your house, you may have one in your garage, you may be one at a garage sale. You don't have to buy a dedicated one for the iPhone, just as there were tripod adapters for iPads. So go look on any of the sources that you can find for iPhone tripod adapter, and then find a tripod that you really like. You need one that's sturdy enough that you can hold it steady and not so big you forget to bring it with you.
Yeah, that or want to bring it with you. If it's
right, good. Exactly. That's my problem. It sits in the trunk of the car, you know. But a too little one will never hold it steady and possibly could get blown over by a gust of wind, which you don't want to have happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go back to your book for just a minute here in our last minute or so, Jack, and talk about what you've got in the book for people.
This book was based on several years of teaching digital photography classes to beginners, and that's why it's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. We have it on sale for $10 postpaid because I really want people this summer to sit down and read at least half the book. If you read the whole book, fantastic. But this is going to teach people who just know nothing about digital photography what resolution is, what exposure is, what f-stops are, and it's not hard. These are based on the same questions I got for 8 years of teaching classes. And in my opinion, and I'll be blunt about it, I think it's for people who can learn by just reading, it is the easiest way to learn these things. And I'm told it's also pretty entertaining because it's a little bit of history, like where did flash bulbs come from? So there's some other stuff in it. But you will learn more, even if you only read the first five chapters, than practically any other way of getting the information. And seriously, I'm going to brag. It'll be the best $10 you spent this summer on a book.
Where did flash bulbs come from?
Well, they started out with flash powder, you know, which was magnesium.
Yeah.
And finally, someone figured out how to put magnesium filaments in a bulb, and that was a big deal.
Oh.
And I've got the short history of those things in the book in the back. Yeah, it's pictures of flash cubes and magic cubes and things like that. I mean, it gives you a little idea of where we came from and why this stuff is the way it is.
Jack, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll look forward to your next visit.
Take care now. Thank you.
Yeah, Jack Socha, a photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And, of course, we have on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show links to his site. He's got lots of good information right on the site, and I can tell you a lot of things, especially things that you can get for free to help your editing video editing and digital editing. So great to have him along. Tomorrow, it's Friday again already, and that means Garden Talk. And my old friend Melinda Myers is going to be back with tips to keep your garden looking at its best during the summer, and she'll be answering all of your gardening questions. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.